Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Oh, it's almost winter lunchtime. Is that right, Matt Pursley? Just tell us about your new rota of winter lunches.
Yeah, I'm about to go into winter. I've got jumpers on now, and so therefore it means winter lunches are going to start. That's soup and a nice sourdough.
Oh, I do love a sourdough. I've never been a big soup man, but maybe I'll delve in.
Fairly kind of like just mid-tier, like the Covent Garden ones. Not something super expensive off your big finest ranges, but just kind of like a pound.
I'm boring when it comes to soup. Just tomato soup does me fine. Go wrong with that.
Are you dedicated to having a soup like every day then?
What's your favourite soup, Jesse?
Oh, that's really stumped me. I don't know. For some reason, I can't think of a soup other than tomato soup, and that's not my favourite soup.
Minestrone.
No, not even that. I was going to type in best soups on Google.
Oxtail.
I'm not an oxtail guy.
I do actually like oxtail. Partner makes a good oxtail soup. So, let's go with that. Oxtail, classic.
Something like, I like a potato and leek. I like a lentil and bacon. A winter vegetable. That's good as well.
Well.
Just pair it with a good bread and you're banging.
Oh, you pair anything with a good bread and it goes well, doesn't it? That's what I did with a sausage last night. I had a lovely sausage sandwich.
I really wanted to see what your segue was going to be from bread to what we're going to discuss in a moment.
Well, we can do that. We can follow the trail of breadcrumbs to Avatar Frontiers Pandora. I'm Simon Cardius, the IGN UK podcast. That's Jesse Gomez.
Hello.
And Matt Pursley. Oh, what are we going to talk about this week? Matt, you've gone hands-on with the upcoming Avatar game. Jesse, you've played through the whole of RoboCop, Rogue City.
I sure have.
I watched a new Scorsese film, so as usual, it's the best week of every 3 years for me. And I did a little bit of climbing, but not in real life. We'll get onto that soon. Avatar, Frontiers of Pandora. Based on the hit James Cameron Blue People series.
is it just Far Cry? I think that's the main thing I want to know.
I think that's a lot of people when they watch the trailers, right, for Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. They went, maybe I'm putting words in people's mouth. When I watched it, I thought, this is like Far Cry, but with big blue cat people.
Yeah.
Is that what this is? Or are we going to be pleasantly surprised?
I think the answer is, and I apologize in advance, it's yes and no. It's a little bit from column A, it's a little bit from column B.
It does make you feel like an avatar.
No, because you are actually a Na'vi. You are a genuine Na'vi rather than an avatar.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So this is, I guess it is based on Avatar, but it's also a canon storyline that's going to take place in the Avatar universe. It's on a section of Pandora that nobody has seen before. Even though the bit that I played, so I've played 2 hours of it, and that is in a very rainforest-like bio.
I was going to say, it very much looks like Pandora.
Yeah.
Still.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask was, are we playing as like the water clan or the forest clan? Because like, does it have a specific unique biome?
So there are three different clans in this game from three different biomes, but I don't really know a huge amount about them because we only got to play in one biome. But I do know that kind of like one of them is more of a, it's been in the trailers. There's the rainforesty stuff, which is what I played in. But then there's a much more kind of like open plains, almost Hyrule-looking-ish kind of area. But there is a clan for each of those, which each have their own kind of, obviously not way of water, because it's not set by the lakes and oceans like that one, like the second film was. But I think like one of them's got like the way of bones or something like that. Like they use like animals and stuff like that. But yeah, essentially
the soup with that.
Yeah, the bit that I played is set in the rainforesty bit, and it is very Far Cry in the fact that you are, it's obviously it's open world, you can go around like harvesting plants, you can hunt animals, there are outposts which are the RDA human outposts to kind of take down, and then there are main quest missions. What I would say is, whilst it's definitely structurally quite like a Far Cry game in that there's lots of little activities to do around, some of them are side quests, some of them are main quests, some of them are, you know, those sort of repeating activities that you see in every, like, you know how when we played Spider-Man kind of like a couple of weeks ago, one of those locations around New York has got the same activities, you know, they're not the identical, but they're of that activity group. It's got all of that. It's got all the shit that you expect from a Far Cry game.
Okay.
What I would say is it didn't necessarily feel like I was just playing a Far Cry game. And part of that is because obviously Avatar doesn't look anything like Far Cry. This is probably one of the more impressive looking games of this ilk. Like you're on the frontier, you're in the wilderness. Because every plant like reacts to your presence. So as you walk up to them, you know, the classic, the big trumpet like mushrooms that everybody knows that are in Avatar, that when they get close to them, they like, they collapse down, don't they? Like they are around, and lots of plants of that ilk that when you get close to them, they all like pop away or they fizz or they sort of sprout things. And so it's got this sort of sense of aliveness that I wouldn't say you get out of a Far Cry sort of environment.
Is it a living, breathing world?
I mean, no, because it's made out of ones and zeros. But yes, it is probably the closest that you could get to that sort of statement. And it is genuinely beautiful. All I can say is apologies about the video quality on the preview that's up on IGN, because we were only allowed to capture at 1080p, which is odd for a game that looks that good. But it did genuinely, for a game that I thought in trailers didn't look great, I was pleasantly surprised playing it.
How does it actually stack up when it comes to combat? Because just based on the trailers, like I think the only enemies I've seen is like, you know, you're going up against humans, and like now you could fucking flick them with their middle finger and they'll go flying like 10 meters in the air.
Yeah, that's it.
Fair enough.
we'll start with combat then. I think this is the least interesting part of this game, which is a shame because as with most people on this podcast, I love shooting something.
Just a destructive person, aren't you, really?
Yeah, maybe. The combat engagements that were in the demo, I didn't think were particularly great. A cool thing is that, so you've obviously got this split of equipment. There's The base premise is that because you were a Navi that was kidnapped as a kid and you've been held hostage by the RDA, you have a knowledge of how to use like all the assault rifles and shotguns and stuff
That's well convenient.
Yeah, but then basically the narrative kind of like catalyst for this is that you've returned to kind of like Pandora and you're trying to like link with your Navi heritage. So you also have all the Navi equipment, which is basically bows and arrows. There are three different bows, of which I used two in this demo, which was a longbow, like just a standard, you know, like jack of all trades longbow, and a heavy bow, which is, I mean, as it sounds, it effectively fires tree trunks. And then I got something called a staff sling, which was basically like a trap deployment thing. Imagine like a, is it lacrosse, the one that you play with a net? Imagine that, the lacrosse staff stick thing, but you put a grenade in the end of it and like punt it across the world. And I got the human assault rifle. Obviously, assault rifles, super loud, really inaccurate. You also, I don't think you could look down the sights on them, so they're kind of a little bit more kind of rattly. And then the bow is much more precise, but obviously slower, stealthier.
Yeah.
And so you can see kind of like where the two gameplay kind of patterns there. The issue that I had was that I obviously, as a child of Dishonored, played it fairly stealthy. And only in one combat situation did that pose any like challenge. So you go up, you'd find like groups of humans that were kind of like pottering around the open world, generally doing something nasty to something in nature. So for example, one of them had got this giant like rhinoceros style creature in a cage. I was able to pick off every single one of the like five people that were guarding that without any of the others knowing that I was doing it. So it's like there was no combat challenge at all. It was just And I would have expected if when one of them went down like a sack of potatoes, that one of the others would be like, what the hell's going on here? And start going into an alert phase. They didn't. And that happened like three times. So I just think that the AI might be a bit brain dead.
I can imagine the challenge would be with, you know, the mechs and going up against the actual machinery of whatever the army's called and whatnot.
Yeah. Yes and no. So, you can take down the mechs with the bows. They haven't done anything to do that. You can take them down very easily with the machine guns. I was quite surprised at how easy an AMP mech goes down. Like, they went down super quick.
Yeah.
But what you have is, you know how in Horizon you can use like the vision that shows you where all of the weak points are on a on like one of the robot beasts? It has exactly that. You can also, from the weapon wheel, craft like different types of arrows, exactly like you do in Horizon. And it uses that system where like you fire at the weak point. So for example, on an amp mech, some of them have rocket launchers that are on the back of them. So if you shoot the rockets, they explode and basically destroy the mech.
I was going to ask, is it just like shooting through the big sheet of glass and then they all die?
Well, you can do that. So for example, like if they've got the glass canopy on the front, you can shatter that glass canopy and then shoot the pilot and then the mech is dealt with. Or you can like fire an arrow into the exhaust vent on the back and that causes like an internal explosion. So there's definitely kind of like, I think that's cool in the idea of it's promoting precision, right? Like, do you want to just go in with a machine gun, which will just shatter the canopy and kill them? I mean,
that's the Horizon of it all,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think if this game was in third person, there'd be a lot more of a like, oh, this is a bit of a Horizon kind of knockoff. Yeah.
Mm. Not Far Cry Primal.
Yeah, yeah, which it does feel more like that, I'd say. But I like the weak point structure that Horizon has got, so I'm not going to criticize this for having that because that's the interesting part of combat.
I love that combat, and it is weird, like you mentioned the enemy AI. Maybe that'll be different in a month or so when it releases, but because Massive are like, for me anyway, I think the Division's enemy AI is really smart.
It's really good.
I don't know, like, obviously you can't just copy and paste code over to enemies, but like... It is weird if they've gone from, you know, some of the smartest enemy AI to absolute dunces.
Yeah, because
maybe they're meant to be stupid because they're stupid humans invading a planet, but it doesn't make for a fun time.
No. And it's like, as you say, I've played quite a lot of The Division earlier this year.
Yeah.
And those enemies properly flank you and they've got lots of different abilities that they can use against you. Whereas, the most combat I got was when I went to do... the last bit of the demo was kind of an outpost takedown. You had to go to this RDA compound, which obviously is quite a different... It's a big transition from being in the rainforest to being in this massive like concrete and steel base. And it's got a little bit of rudimentary kind of immersive sim style things where like you can find a vent to kick the vent in and then creep into it. And there's a few gantry ways and there's like these hooks that you can hook onto, which will take you up a few levels. So it's got some very basic kind of stealth work in there. And then you have to go around that base looking for, essentially it's like five switches to turn off all the drilling and you know, make the place explode or whatever. The stealth was okay, but I found that like I was more spotted easily in that situation because there's so many people in that base.
Right, and you're like a 10-foot blue tall, yeah, blue yeah, cat yeah, in, yeah, a, exactly. in a building.
And things kicked off more there, and the mech suits that were in that base were like maybe like the next rank up, so they were a little bit beefier. And that combat was more of an issue because when you get seen in that situation, they raise the alarm, reinforcements turn up. And that was definitely when things have all kicked off. It's more of a traditional Far Cry-y sort of combat encounter. But when I was encountering them out in the open world, like, they just didn't know I was there. And there was no sense of kind of like risk reward against them. It was like, oh, I can just headshot all of these people and be on my merry way. So I'd like to see that improved. To talk about something that's a little bit more impressive is actually it's like the traversal around the open world.
That's what I wanted to ask, because obviously, you know, you watch the films and the Navi can, like, you know, without any effort, just sort of dance and glide mm-hmm. over the entire environment, because obviously it's their home and stuff. And I'll almost imagine this wanting to control like a Mirror's Edge kind of thing, just being able to climb.
Have you read
my
preview, Jesse?
No, I haven't.
Rude.
Well, yeah, rude to begin with. And
sorry, I'm a busy
yes,
man.
There is a direct comparison to Mirror's Edge in my preview. It's not Mirror's Edge in that it's not a genuine parkour system. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have kind of like that full attention to detail. But what it is you can leap, and there's a real good sense of balance in okay. that kind of like, you can leap up into tree branches and you can run along those tree branches without feeling like, you know, when you try and do platforming in first person games, it can
yeah,
quite often feel a bit precarious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This never had that. I never died once from a like leaping or running situation where I was kind of like 15 foot off the ground.
Okay.
Well, it'd be higher than that because obviously they're 10 foot to begin with. 15 foot wouldn't be a good drop. But all of this came together in there's like this central quest called Take Flight, where basically you run up a mountain, and obviously this mountain is the classic Avatar style where it all branches out and juts and it's covered in tree vines and stuff like that. And you get to the top, and that's where you get your Banshee, your Ikran.
That you can call Carol, right?
That you can call Carol. You have read my preview, Jesse.
No, I remember you guys joking about it, and I saw the actual image. And I was like, why can you call it Carol?
Yeah, you can call it Carol or Floof, as well as a variety of other actual Na'vi-style names. But yeah, actually getting up that mountain was like genuinely really fun, because it's all the stuff that I like about first-person kind of like fluid movement systems. Mm. And it's combined with, while there's so many plants in this world, and most of them are just kind of like for decoration, but quite a few of them, what they call planimals,
Jesus Christ,
are able to kind of like give you movement buffs. So, for example, kind of like there are these plants that spray out a blue mist, and when you run through them and inhale that mist, it makes you faster. God. So you start to recognize that they are dotted around in kind of like pathways. Mm. So you just, they become like booster pads in something like a Sonic, right? Where
so
you're running.
These guys are always fucking high, just shooting up mid-stride.
Yeah, basically. And then there's kind of like, there was this bit where there was like these giant mushrooms that you could bounce on that got you up to higher.
Okay.
There's these vines that remind me a lot of the barnacles from Half-Life, in that when you grab their like tongues, they lift you up.
That's cool. So
all of that kind of chained together. And it was like, I was genuinely having fun doing that. Mm. And then at the top, you get to like bond with the Ikran, and then you can...
Bond with Carol.
Yeah, yeah. I called mine Carol. And then like, you just get to leap off the top of this mountain and then fly around on this Ikran, which the Ikran itself feels kind of slow compared to what you do on the ground. And I guess that's probably because it goes into third person and you can see a lot more of the world. But I think...
Did you get a sense of just how big this open world is? Like, I'm guessing you'll need to fly around, right?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you can't run around the whole of it.
I mean, I would imagine, you know, kind of like when you think of how big the map is in Horizon Forbidden West, like that's a that's a colossal
that's
map.
Massive, yeah.
And obviously towards the end of that game, when you get your flying mount, that obviously changes kind of a lot of your feeling of how big that map is and all of that. I do think that like the Ikran, from what I understand you, this was about 20 to 25% of the way into the game. So you get that a lot earlier than you would in Horizon. So I think the size of the map is probably considered, and also the Ikran's more a part of the Avatar DNA, isn't it? Like you need that to fulfill that fantasy. So I think the map is large, and there seemed maybe less fast travel locations than there would be in like a traditional Far Cry.
Everything I'm hearing about this game, like, it doesn't sound bad by any means, but it all just sounds like
bits borrowed from a lot of other games, like interesting things, but like is there what sets this game apart? Is it the way it like confronts the nature side of things?
It's definitely a game where what I would say is, whilst it's very structurally like Far Cry, if the 2 hours that I've played is representative of the whole, I'd say this is a less confrontational game than Far Cry is about gunning your way through savage lands, really, isn't it? Is kind of like the way that it's almost set up. Whereas this is definitely more about your harmonious relationship with nature. There was much more, like the activities were, oh, hey, here's a creature that has been stuck with an RDA dart. So you approach it and you pull the dart out and that saved the creature from, I guess, slavery or whatever. A lot of kind of like cooking, almost that Zelda coziness in that kind of like you're going around and like when you harvest, whereas in Far Cry, you'd use your machete, right, and cut the plant and then take it. In this, it's like a lock-picking minigame. You have to go up and pick the fruit and you rotate the analog stick until the controller vibrates correctly. And then you gently pull the fruit from the plant. So it's all about being respectful. And there's this idea of quality over quantity where if you pick like this fruit while it's raining, it will be of better quality. Okay. And so it's not about like collecting 150 different fruits. It's more about getting like the 3 or 4 that are good and using that and cooking makes meals that like give you buffs, and also your health will only regenerate if you've eaten. So you have to keep like your energy meter up. So there's a lot more of this kind of like harmonious with nature.
Yeah.
Whether that's the sort of thing that actually genuinely sets it apart or just feels like one layer of a game that otherwise might largely feel a lot like not one specific game you've felt before, sorry, that you've played before, but like a lot of games that you're very familiar with, a lot of kind of systems and approaches that are just kind of like, not, I wouldn't even say in vogue at the moment, that are just part of the general landscape. And so while I sort of expected the worst out of this going in, I'm not a massive fan of the Avatar films. Like, I think they're beautiful, but I don't have any interest in that world.
Yeah.
So I went in expecting it to just be Far Cry with that skin on. It's definitely not that. And the thing that I got out of it most, I really love jumping around and running across those branches. I think it is absolutely one of those Christmas games where you can just veg out with it and just do it because you know what the checklist is.
Well, it's fully co-op, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a 2-player co-op game, of which, you know, maybe that is something that I potter around with. I think what they've made is good. I don't think what they've made is anything exceptional, at least at this point. Maybe full playthrough.
That's what I'm getting. Whereas before I had like kind of no interest in playing this, like I'm now like, I'm not saying I'm not excited necessarily, but I'm intrigued. It is doing a couple of different things. So
that's exactly how I feel about it.
I think it's more exploring that world. That sounds interesting. At least the movement was the main thing for me because I didn't want it to feel sluggish because that's just not who you're playing as.
Yeah, you feel really nimble. And that was the thing that I enjoyed the most. I thought that was really cool. And just the look of the world. And I'm pleased that they've tried to create a game that is more about that harmony with the natural world. It should be an eco-warrior game, right? Like it should be about protecting natural environments from the poison of humankind.
Exactly. Well, that links us on to RoboCop, which is another game based on a film where I suppose he's trying to, you know, combat the toxicity of humankind as well in a way by policing the streets of neo-noir Detroit. Jesse.
Yeah.
Rogue City is a game set between RoboCop 2 and 3, but I don't think people really need to worry about being a whole like deal up on their RoboCop sequel lore, do they?
I mean, I wouldn't say it's important, especially since it has been ages since I've watched RoboCop 1 or 2, and I don't even think I've seen 3, not that it matters for this specific game. No.
Obviously, Avatar, we're talking about how nimble those characters are. I think RoboCop famously unnimble, quite a solid, slow gentleman. That's one question I have about this game. It's obviously a shooter, but a shooter where you kind of play as a walking tank. For me, when I look at shooters, like my favorite shooters are something like Titanfall 2 or where like movement is key, like sliding around, jumping around. I like being nimble. Like when I play online shooters, I'll play more, you know, I like playing Tracer rather than, you know, slower characters in Overwatch. Like, does that still, is it fun to just walk around and shoot? Or do you wish you could run and dodge? That's the one big question I have about this game.
I think it's sort of, that's sort of handled with the fact of how many enemies you usually face, because you're dealing with just an insane onslaught of like dudes on motorbikes who are charging at you, guys who are carrying like little bombs and they run up to you so they can, you know, blow themselves up with you as well. And, you know, you're going up against robots and all these other things. And like it does feel like just chunky. I don't know. It feels chunky to play Robocop mm-hmm. because every time, you know, you're walking around, you're hearing his feet, you're hearing that thud of, you know, the ground hitting it. And stuff
it
like
still
that.
Feels good, right? Because it's not too short a game either. Like, it keeps it going.
I finished it in like, I think 7 or 8 hours. Other okay, people,
well that's probably, that'll be like 10 to 12 for most, because you just go madly through the game.
I'm assuming because there's quite a lot of side objectives in it as well, isn't it? Is that main line just core objectives?
Yeah, it's near enough main line. I did a few side quests and stuff, and the way the game sort of operates is that it's not like one continuous sort of open world. There's sort of like little hubs that you'll explore, and there'll be a few missions, side missions to do within those hubs, and then you have your main objective. And if you're about to leave the area, the game will literally say, you're about to leave, here are the side missions you haven't done. Once you leave, they're over.
It's actually constructed quite a lot like an arcane game or like old Deus Ex, where like you go into a hub zone and you've got the main objective but also quite a few other things you can do.
Yeah, and like some of those like side things that you can do earlier on are a bit stupid. Like there's one thing where I was walking around a police station trying to get people to sign cards for someone.
I kind of like that though, because it harks back to the 80s. Like, because Robocop, no matter how, like, you know, it is kind of got a serious like satirical message to it, but it just, the design of Robocop, like, it is silly.
Oh no, it's ridiculous. There was another one where some other cop was like, oh, I don't want to deal with the people who are, you like, lining up to, you know, put in police reports, can you do it? And then Robocop's like, next in line, and it's just really dumb and stuff. And
I really like those two quests though. Yeah. So I've only done the first kind of two main kind of missions in it, but I did both of those side quests, and I do really like the contrast of this fucking walking tank man helping people at the front desk, because he's just a beat cop. That's what he is. Yeah. And I like that he gets to just do beat cop stuff in this.
But I think what's great is, because I think the game, what did we score? Like a 7, I think. And I think that's
it. Yeah, but what do you think?
Well, no, I was just going to say it is sort of like the perfect 7 or 6 out of 10 experience. And if you are looking just to like blow shit up, this is the perfect game for it. It's got an impressive amount of destruction to it, especially if you're in like an office building or just near enough anywhere. If you're like letting loose with an Uzi, like the walls are crumbling down, things are exploding, glass is shattering everywhere. And even when you're killing people, like bits of their brain get stuck to the wall and slides down with the blood. It is ridiculous. But I mean, Robocop 1 and 2, like, those were ridiculously violent films anyway, and it perfectly mimics
it's
that.
Leaning into the source material, right? Mm. That is one thing I've noticed from, like, I still not played a second in this game, but from watching all the trailers and the gameplay, like, they've got the feel of Robocop, right, and the aesthetic. I was always intrigued, like, I don't know if this was overblown in previous or not, like, people saying there's like quite a bit of a detective element to the game. Is that actually there?
No, and this is what really, I mean,
I'm
not looking for like Deus Ex moments, but there was one particular moment where I was sort of investigating this garage and stuff, and I was putting my points into being able to like convince people, but I didn't really put my skill points into being able to like, I don't know, examine items. And there'll be parts where you need to investigate a scene and stuff just to gather evidence, and then you can confront a character about whatever. And there was one part where there was a note literally on this table. I myself could read that note. I scanned it as Robocop, and he was like, my deduction level isn't great. I can't read this note written in English. And I was like, that's fucking stupid.
I think the RPG part of this game is like superfluous to requirement. It really didn't need it. So for example, similar to that, when I was playing it last night, I saw there was like this massive crate against a wall, and there were scratches on the ground, which very clearly showed that like this has been moved to the side because there's something hidden behind it. because my deduction skill wasn't high enough. Yeah. Like, unfortunately, Murphy's just a bit like, I do not know what this is.
Yeah, like, it made me question, like, what is RoboCop's reading level? Because it's clearly, like, level one or some shit. He's an idiot in this game.
I ultimately think, like, the game just didn't need an RPG system because... But what I will say is maybe sort of counter to what you've just said there, Jesse, is that I actually do think there is a surprising amount of quote-unquote detective work in this. Mm. It's not LA Noir in the fact that kind of like you are doing... or something like Sherlock Holmes where you're having to make actual deductions.
You're not interrogating people.
No,
I mean, sometimes you are.
Oh, okay, cool.
But not in that, not in the way that LA Noir does it. What I would say is the surprising thing for me is I came to this game expecting it to be an 80s style first person shooter where like you're just walking through corridors, absolutely blasting the shit out of people so they explode. There is a surprising amount of this game that isn't shooting, like just where the gun is literally locked in your pardon. Mm.
Oh no, that when it's just like dialogue and exploring and just going over environments.
I thought you said where it's boring, which I don't like. I do love the shooting, but I say love, like I like the shooting. I was surprised at how much of this game is walking around locations, chatting to people, doing like solving what I consider like more minor crimes. Like the main sort of element of the first hub that you go to, which is kind of like just Detroit streets at night, is... Yeah. It's like the mayor's daughter's car's been stolen. So that's like your secondary case. It's like, work this out. And so you're just going around questioning people, working out, you know, what's happened. And you eventually like find the car stolen and work that out. And then there was like another one where there's like a police informant called Pickles. There's a very, very good 80s joke in there regarding whether people think his name is Gherkin or Pickles. But again, that is you going to people's houses and chat to people and working out where this missing cop has gone.
Yeah.
So there is a surprising, like I would say like 40% of this game, maybe even 50, isn't just walking around and blowing people's heads off, which is not the game that I expected out of this.
Yeah, I mean, there is a ton of dialogue to go through and stuff. And it's sort of each even sort of chapter is put together with RoboCop speaking to a therapist from... OCP who's been like assigned to him, and it's sort of like their way of giving you like a ranking at the end of each chapter and stuff, and you're sort of like,
reminds me a little bit of like Blade Runner 2049, like the little debriefs. Ryan Gosling,
yeah,
it is sort of like that. And like there are like certain ramifications that, you know, can occur and stuff. There are different endings in this game, similar, not crazy like different outcomes like something you might find in a, I don't know, like an Arcane game or whatever, but it's almost, I don't know if this comparison is fair, but it almost Fallout in a way where you're going to get different slides at the end of the game that are narrated depending on, you know, the actions you've done and stuff like that. Because there are certain moments where, you know, you can put a parking ticket on someone's car and that's serving the justice. If you find someone doing graffiti on the wall, you can be like, fuck you, I'm arresting you. Or like, here's just a warning, you know? And there are like other options where, you know, you can either try and save people or let them die.
It seems like it has like this broad, you know how Mass Effect has Paragon and Renegade? It seems like every choice that you make is either like upholding the public trust or upholding the law. And the law is very much the one where like you stick to the book. And if someone has done a crime, you absolutely hold them to account and you give them a ticket or you arrest them. And then like upholding the public trust is being more of a...
It's just being nice.
Yeah, I understand why you might have done this thing that would technically be considered a crime, but I'm going to let you off.
Yeah, I'm more intrigued to play this now. It was going to be one I'd save for the NDA, and I still might, but like... Because my one worry was it would be a bit one-note. It just would be walking through, destroying everything, which can be, you know, a bit of light relief, I suppose, just blowing loads of stuff up. But yeah, I'm actually more intrigued by that whole detective side of it and the talking and the...
It's absolutely a B game for a B movie. And it, you know, occasionally it's got a little bit of what I would consider that Eurojank where it's reaching a little bit too far for what it actually
100%.
Is. I don't know if I'm ever going to finish this game. There are a lot of other games out. I'm, you know, barely into Alan Wake at this point.
I'll get on with that.
I love it. It's exactly my sort of game.
I'm having a fucking amazing time with that game.
It's, like I said last week, Baldur's Gate is still my game of the year, but my heart wants to say it's Alan Wake, but
you're allowed to have a number two pick.
I know exactly that is my second favorite game of the year so far.
So it's like, you know, I don't have essentially any intention to very quickly go back to RoboCop. Now I've played like the first two like settings in it.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to go off and I'm going to finish Alan Wake. And I'm, you know, there are a few other games that I want to get through. But I do think like at some point I might come back to this. There is something about it that I just think is, it's just above, it's a little bit above Mindless, but when it does the Mindless bits, like they explode and they explode good. And then when you do the RoboCopy bits, it's got that kind of tongue-in-cheek 80s about it. Yeah. And it's also, it's definitely not Alien in terms of like its presentation, but it's definitely got a little bit of that. Like I like it when you scan things and they've made the UI, it looks like it's been pulled from an 80s movie. It's got that slight fuzziness around the edge of it. The color grading on it is all exactly pulled from an 80s film.
I mean, even the people you're going up against, like, you know, these sort of like 70s, 80s looking punks and stuff with the crazy hair, you're fighting in arcades. And even beyond that, you're fighting like biker gangs, or you're, you know, visiting the OCP headquarters and a bunch of other places you'll recognize from the films, even down to specific enemies from those films as well. So if you, you know, if you enjoyed those films, like, I'd see no reason why you shouldn't play RoboCop Rogue City.
Seems like a good, solid shooter, and definitely a step up from their last game, the Terminator one, which was atrocious.
I never played it.
See, I've always heard mixed things about that. It seems like that is like a hidden gem among certain
people. I think gem is a strong word. Not for me, let's put it that
way. That's fair.
Do you know what is for me, though? A Martin Scorsese film.
Oh, you don't say.
I do like a big Marty. Ironic, little man, isn't he?
What's this one about, Cardi?
What's this one about?
I've genuinely not actually looked at anything to do with this film.
So yeah, I treat myself on Monday. We all had the day off, and I took myself to Pitch House Central in the afternoon on a Monday. Me and four other people in there, just soaking in that Dolby set Atmos sound.
What screen was it in?
Screen one.
Oh,
yeah,
that's a treat,
screen
isn't
one.
It?
I made sure I picked. One. That's my favorite. Maybe my favorite. Well, definitely my favorite screen for sound in London. But I treated myself. I took myself there. Only like £13 because it was a Monday afternoon. I need to be like a pensioner who gets to go to the cinema during the day. That'd be great.
I was Killers ill, so Thought. I couldn't come with you. But
I know. I still need to go see The Killer though. So if anyone wants to see some Fincher,
shit, is that actually in the cinema?
Yeah.
I thought that was just coming to Netflix. I do really want to see that.
Pay attention.
I'm sorry. I'm busy. RoboCop's
anyway, Killers of the Flower Moon is an Apple TV film, but is in the cinemas at the moment. Will eventually come to Apple, I'm guessing, in a few weeks before the end of the year. They haven't given a firm release date yet. It is 3.5 hours long, which is standard. Why I think a lot of people would want to watch it at home, so you can pause it. I needed to see this in the cinema, and as I said numerous times before, I love, like, film length doesn't really bother me. Like, go as long as you need, and I'll be there, sitting there. Didn't even need to get up once. I was very proud of myself and my bladder. Killers of the Flower Moon is a true story of, in the 1920s, in Osage County in the United States of America, the Osage people, the Native Americans, basically were forcibly moved to this land, but then, you know, it was considered, you know, dead land. No one would want to live there, so they were basically moved there by white settlers. Turns out, lots of oil in this part of the world that they stumble across. So,
they're going to drink it like a milkshake.
This is why I love the film, because it's I love an oil film. Basically, yeah, so these Native Americans become suddenly some of the richest people in the country because they have the land rights to all this oil money. So naturally, in the years that follow, lots of white people come to this area of the country, build up a town, and start marrying these Native American women who own land rights to the country.
It's like a fucking Game of Thrones style marriage.
So it's kind of a big old pyramid scheme, conspiracy of murder, and this is all a true story. Like, everything happened, all the characters in this film were in real life. So basically, yeah, mysteriously, a lot of these young women and men as well just end up dying. So it's kind of, this film revolves around Molly, who is played by Lily Gladstone, who is one of these women, and she is unbelievably good in this film. Like, this is one of the best performances I've seen in a long time. There's one just like noise, one like scream she lets out in this film that, like, genuinely, like, just like, I don't get overly emotional during films, but like brought a tear to my eye. Just one, that's one noise, and I was like, Jesus, that is like raw emotion.
And it centers around her relationship with Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Ernest, who she marries, and their relationship with his uncle, played by Robert De Niro, who is kind of, he's considered like the king of this town. He, like, everyone loves him. Like, he does good things to everyone, the white people and the Native American people.
Is he an oil man, though?
He's not necessarily an oil man.
I was gonna
say,
how true is how nice he is?
Well, he appears nice. look, this is, I'm not going to spoil this story, but, you know, it's a true story. You can read up. It's based on a book. If you want to know about it before seeing the film, you can. I don't think it would necessarily ruin it, because the film never presents itself as like a whodunit. Like, you know pretty early on what's going on here. It's more a procedural about, are they going to get away with this, and the relationships between Leonardo DiCaprio and Lily Gladstone's characters, and how, kind of like, what can... can you love someone and still do horrible things to someone? And can that be forgiven? Which is arguably no.
I was going to ask, is it told from a particular perspective of one of the characters, or is it more just a shared experience?
It kind of, I would say it starts off from the perspective of Leonardo DiCaprio and kind of follows him through the film, kind of shifts to Lily Gladstone's character for bits of it, but it is kind of, that's the interesting bit. Like, from the start, you are kind of centered on these people that obviously are not the best people in the world, and quite stupid people as well. Just like, his character who's just come back from the First World War and's kind of come back to town with not really anything to do, and he's kind of told by Robert De Niro's character, oh, maybe, you know, you should go marry one of these women. That is kind of the setup. And it's also, coincidentally, kind of ties in with the birth of the FBI. So,
okay,
Jesse Plemons, everyone's favorite, like, comes to town one day, and he is one of the first, like, FBI detectives, basically. And that's how that's part of the story, which the book, I believe, goes into in much more depth, is about, like, the start and the birth of the FBI, whereas the film centers much more on just this town and what happened. Okay. It's unbelievably good. Like, I was, like, blown away. Like, I'm still. I know people say it's like, oh, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, days after this film, I'm still thinking about it. Like, it is so powerfully good. Like, every performance is on point. Martin Scorsese is just, the man's in his 80s and he's just still pumping out some of the best work. Like, this is, I think, quite easy now to say my film of the year. Like, it is so good. I can't recommend it enough. It is, you know, it is a long 200 minutes and it isn't, you know, at times it, like, speeds along, because Thelma Schoonmaker, who's, like, my hero, her editing in Scorsese films always kind of keeps things ticking along, unless you're maybe watching Silence or Kundun. But there are times where it kind of feels like, kind of, it has a bit of Silence to it, but also, you know, a little bit of The Irishman to it as well, kind of that whole melancholy of, like, this is just a terrible situation. Yeah. And, like, kind of the thing I think Scorsese's been wrestling with for decades, it's like, kind of, is there redemption in bad people? Mm-hmm. Is kind of the theme of all his films, I think. And this definitely explores that. It's so good. Like, if you don't want to see it at the cinema, I get it. It's a long time to commit. But when this comes to Apple TV, I recommend everyone give it a go.
Do you think you really lose out if you're, I know it's bad to say for his films, do you think you're really losing out for not watching it in the cinema?
I thought, for me personally, I needed to see it in the cinema, because it sounds amazing. Well, the score from Robbie Robertson, who did a lot of his scores for him, he actually died a few months ago, is unbelievably good as well. I'm glad I saw it. I wanted to go to cinema more for the sound than the image.
Okay.
Like, it looks stunning as well, but I wanted it more for the sound, and I'm glad I did. At home, you'd still get I watched The Irishman at home. I didn't actually go see The Irishman in the cinema. I still loved it.
Yeah.
This is better than The Irishman, though. This is, like, I think this is, if I had to put it now, I'd say it's, like, in his top five films, which is, you know, a high mark.
And where does The Irishman lie in that?
It's probably, like, I don't know, 8 or something, fair 9 enough for me.
In terms of, it's obviously incredibly hard subject matter, right? Like, this is, whereas, you know, Scorsese obviously has had a career where he has been looking at incredibly horrible people, but earlier on in his career, much more fictitious kind of people. Yeah. And he's obviously a man that is confronting his own mortality at this point, right? And realizing that incredibly horrible things happen in the world, and he's kind of turned an eye here to actual real atrocities.
Mm.
How kind of sensitively does it deal with, like, the kind of the, say, sort of side of things?
I think it does it. I mean, I can't, obviously from someone not from that culture, I can't say it does it brilliantly, but Lily Gladstone herself is of that culture. I'm trying to find the right words. But like, from what I've read, a lot of people think it does it well. Obviously, there's a lot of people like, this isn't a white person's story to tell, which is what Scorsese has
The interesting
done.
Thing I was but, thinking there is it a story where he's telling the horrors of the white perspective from that, which is his place to speak?
I think so, yeah. This is definitely, this is the story of America in a nutshell. We, like, white people come to America and have basically taken from this land for hundreds of years. Like, that is what this story is. And, like, in a nutshell, that is what this story is telling. And the way this film ends is really interesting as well. I don't want to spoil it, but, like, Scorsese, like, kind of literally takes the reins of it at one point, and the way it does its, like, coda at the end to explain, like, what happened to these people is really interesting. And the music is all brilliant, like I said. I really want to see this film again. And despite it being 3.5 hours of quite, like you said, serious, downbeat stuff, there is still the occasional laugh. Like, they kind of play Leonardo DiCaprio, who is also brilliant in this film, like, his character, for laughs at points, just through his, like, denseness. He's not a smart man at all. Like, people will just say stuff. You'll be like, I think it's in the trailer. There's one clip where Jesse Plemons just comes to his door and he's like, I'm from the FBI, looking to talk about about these murders. And then Leonardo DiCaprio goes, see what about them? And Jesse Plemons just stares in for a second and just goes, see who's doing them. And there are like little funny moments like that that break the tension. There's also some very hard stuff to watch. I think this is an 18. If it's not, it should be. Actually, it might just be a 15. But there's like, you know, some pretty horrible
murders. Do you have a viewing of it at 8:15 tonight? That I might
well
watch.
You'll be out at midnight.
That's yeah. fine.
It's okay. I can't recommend this film enough. Killers of the Flower Moon. Worth the waiting. I've been waiting a long time for this one. Like, he's been trying to make this for almost a decade, I think.
Oh, wow.
So, very good film. Go see that. My favourite film of the year. On the other end, sound lovely, sound delightful. I've played a couple hours of Jusant. I don't know if either of you have touched this yet, but
not yet.
Came to Game Pass this week. I think it's out and everything, but I played on Game Pass. I think I'm only half, like I was saying earlier, I'm about halfway through. It's only a 4 to 5 hour game, I think. If you don't know what Jusant is, and that's spelled Jusant, I'm saying it like that because it sounds French. Well, it's developed by a French company. And Jusant actually means, I learned that this is the first thing you see in the game. It is a word like an old like mariner's word for the movement of the tide going out.
Okay
so there you go. So this game respects the sea, so that's always a good always a good stamp to have in a game. It is just kind of a wordless climbing game, and it's beautiful. The art style of this game is just very pleasant, like bright oranges and blues everywhere. Kind of has the kind of essence of like an old Team Eco game. It's kind of got a bit of an Eco Shadow of Colossus, you know, like wordless sort of like adventure. No combat, well, as far as I know, there's none at all. I haven't encountered any yet, but you're kind of just trying to scale up this one tall mountain, so it's got kind of a bit of journey to it as well, I suppose. And you're just trying to scale this mountain, and you slowly get like new abilities, wherever, like at the start you're just like using each trigger to grab handholds and climb this mountain. Then you'll like get new abilities where you can, as you were saying with Avatar earlier, it's quite similar. Like you can command a plant to then like move its vines up, and you can like grab hold and it'll take you up.
It's like
and
grow
things
home.
Like that. Yeah, there's a little bit of grow home to it as well. Like, it's not overly complex. Like, you have to kind of manage stamina and trying to like work, like there's minor puzzle solving elements. You have to work the best route up. Sometimes there's more than one way to try and get to the next handholds and rest for stamina. I'm only 2 hours in. I'm having a lovely time. There's not too much more to say about it. There's a very loose story. Like, there's not really, you're obviously trying, there's a, I don't know if it's some sort of like theological message it's trying to say, some sort of religious meaning for getting to the top of this mountain, but it's just very nice if you want 4 or 5 hours puzzling up a mountain.
I mean, I would say like the inherent danger of like climbing a mountain but then making it peaceful and just lovely is sort of why I wanted out of Death Stranding, which obviously is not what I was going
to
get.
The trailer for Jusant, when I saw it, because that was part of the like the Summer Games Fest, was it? Xbox Showcase. It initially gave to me vertical Death Stranding. Obviously not any of the Mad Kojima nonsense or anything like that, but the actual process of learning how to actually
it's
overcome.
It's much more pleasant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nowhere near as... there's no like resource management or anything like that, which is great. You're just kind of, just scrambling up this mountain with, and you get like a cute little friend who helps you out at some points as well. Nice. Like, yeah, it's very, if you just want a nice chilled time, I think Jusant is a nice thing to be getting on Game Pass at the moment.
Is there any dialogue in the game, or is it just near enough entirely silent?
I think it's wordless, like, as far as I can see. There's like letters you can read, so there's a bit of reading you can do to learn a bit more about this civilization, I think.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah. It is lovely. I've been just been, it's a nice little end of the day chill out game for like an hour, do like a little section. I'm enjoying that very much. Do you know what else I enjoy very much? The Endless Search, and I don't care if no one else does, because we're doing one. A couple of weeks ago, we did an Endless Search from Lee Burton, and he also sent in an Endless Search theme that we never played. Well, this week, we're going to play it. He says, on the topic of the Endless Search theme, I personally really enjoy the current theme, but I thought I'd have a go at making one, because why not? It's my first attempt at making music digitally, so take a listen and see what you think. Thanks, Lee. We'll listen to it now, and we'll let you know what we think.
Endless Search. Where are damn games at? UK IGN. Endless Search. They're still searching. It's the Endless Search.
Jesse, you said it's a funky tune. It's almost got a little bit of RoboCop energy.
Yeah, I felt that. It took me back. Took me back to those days, you know.
Took you back to the days you never lived in.
Yeah, exactly.
The Endless Search. I don't have much time to think of one this week, so I'm just going to do a very simple game. I've got three down here. We'll see how long the first one takes to do. We might just do one of these. It's a simple game of, it's going to be, who am I? It's going to be a 20 questions.
Oh.
I'm a video game character. And you guys take turns at asking yes or no questions. And the first of you to guess which character I am wins the game. It's a very simple game. You just got to ask yes or questions I can answer yes or no to. And I am any video game character. Like I said, well, I've got three names down here. We'll see how long one takes, though, because I've already just gone for ages. So, yeah, I suppose... Who wants to go first? Who's feeling honourable?
Honourable? What's honour got to do with it?
I don't know. Who's anyone feeling kind?
I'll go with it.
Oh, well, that's the opposite of honour. You're just taking control.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, just ask me a yes or no question. Someone.
Has anyone portrayed... Oh, wait, no, fuck. Wait, is there a live action adaptation of this character?
Yes.
Oh.
Okay.
Interesting.
What a left field question. Are you looking at my doc?
No.
I did say doc.
Is your character a PlayStation exclusive?
No.
Interesting.
Has your character ever been released on a Sega console?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Is your character a woman?
No.
Does the character reside in America?
Yes. That's five questions you've asked so far. Mm-hmm.
I feel like I can go for it.
Is your character... portrayed in the video games in third person?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You going to take a guess?
Can I take a guess?
You can, if that's your turn for a question.
Is your character Alan Wake?
No.
Fuck.
There's not been a TV adaptation.
Well, I meant it more like a
live
action.
You did say
live
action,
no.
And technically there is a live.
Yeah, that's what I was
Is
going
it an
for.
Adaptation, though?
Yeah.
Shit. That's seven questions.
Is your adaptation a movie?
Yes.
Okay. It's a third person game that has a man in it that's not an exclusive. So it's on potentially all platforms, or maybe exclusive to something else.
Fuck.
That's eight questions. You've got plenty of time.
Does your character have a brother?
I don't know if I can. I mean, it's not an obvious.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
All right.
No. That's not in question.
Oh, shit.
I suppose you just got to work out what the game is. Yeah, give you yeah.
Is your character from a game that's post 2014?
No.
Right, okay.
That's 10 questions. That's half of your questions.
Does your character have special powers?
No, I'm going to say no.
So they're not supernatural, basically.
No, they're not.
They're naturally skilled, you'd say.
Yeah, they're not. You know, yeah, accessing a part of the superhero abilities or anything.
Fuck that's a lot me. Of
questions.
Jeez.
some people would be screaming right now.
Just will
listen
they?
To that. Listen to that.
I'm
worried. I thought Jesse had got it really early. This is good. Sorry, go on. Not just because he was confident, yeah. Not through any.
Okay. That's not it. That's not it. Is this character Chris Redfield?
No. See, you're just going to keep guessing people. That's you've still got 8 questions. That's 12 questions.
Is your character skilled in climbing?
No, I'd say no. It's not. You'd list that under their skills.
This is bullshit. It's going to kill me.
How many times have you tried to work out if it's Nathan Drake?
Just to now. Yeah, I know. Oh, fuck.
Is it your question now, isn't it, Jesse?
No, you just asked about the climbing.
Oh, of course, yeah. Is this character from a horror series?
No. 6 more questions. Maybe we just do one of these.
Yeah. Has your character killed people?
Yes.
Well, that doesn't help, Jesse.
No, but I'm trying to think of like what video game adaptation is there where someone is like just a brutal killer and not just sort of...
But you kill people all the time in video games, and that's not you don't consider like fucking Nathan Drake a brutal killer.
I love this one because you need to work together but also against each other. 5 more.
It's pre-2014.
Mm.
It's not going to be like Resi or anything like that. Fuck.
This is really killing me inside.
Yeah.
What else could you learn about the game? I wonder. What else could we know?
Is this game?
What?
No, because I'm just trying to figure out like certain questions I've already asked, kind of inform other things. Like the fact that it's a third person probably means that it's like an action adventure game, particularly if it's pre-2014.
Oh my god.
Does Jesse think you've got it, Jesse?
I'm just trying to remember your previous answers and I have one question I think could help me. I just don't think you would choose
it's
this
unfortunately
film.
Unfortunately not your turn.
I know.
That's a shame.
Oh my god. I really want
to
ask.
Is this character from contemporary times?
Yes.
Right, okay.
4 more questions.
Is this character in New York?
Yes.
Am I allowed to guess who it is?
No. You've asked your question.
That's fine. Oh, it has to be the guy I'm thinking of. So bothering me.
But it's weird that you'd say it wouldn't be someone I'd pick.
I'm trying to think of like older games that are set in New York now, and it's just literally. I hate fucking endless search is bullshit because I can never think of anything.
You're just gonna. Hate yourself.
I'm gonna be so shocked if it
is. Is it? fuck. What's he called?
You've still got a question then. Like, basically after this, you've got one more guess each. So Matt can ask, can get one more clue and then you've got a guess each, basically.
He's going to get it, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Does he have an annoying cousin?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, not that I know. Again, not that I know of.
Is it Max Payne?
It is Max Payne.
Fucking hell. That was killing me.
When you said Alan Wake, I was like, oh my God, you were so, you just bit the wrong one.
Because there was that shit, like, what was it, 2010 film or whatever?
Mark Wahlberg. 28,
yeah, 2008. Why would you think I wouldn't pick Max Payne? It's one of my favourite characters.
No, like, I was just trying to think of a certain, I don't know.
For more on me on Max Payne, listen to the Back Page podcast from last week.
That was painful, I'm sorry, everyone.
You can also learn about my life so far, which I spent far too long talking about.
Also, right. I'm gonna refuse to believe that anyone who was listening would have guessed fucking Max Payne.
I think people will have.
There's no way of knowing. There was a Max Payne film, largely because that film is so bad that I've probably erased it from my memory.
You would want to forget about it. Should we just do one of those? That took long enough, didn't it? But I've got a couple of names for another day when we need them.
I'm tempted for the next one, though, but I know it took way too long.
No. Another day now. If you got it within 10... You know, maybe I would have gone with it, but sadly, yeah. Jesse technically wins the game, but I think you both lost, really, if we're honest.
Wow, there we go.
As did the world with the Max Payne film.
Yeah.
Exactly. IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. Write about anything you want to tell us about. Just let us know. I want to hear it. and the search themes, we're always welcome to more of those. Jesse, you've got the first piece of feedback this week.
Yeah, this is from Josh Warden. He says, bonjour, IGN UK crew. Usual stuff, long-time listener, first-time writer, etc. And I require your help. I find myself in the cozy position of no more work-related exams until 2024, meaning my gaming life has resurrected for now. After a mix of studying and 150 hours of Starfield, God, I'm now ready to step into something else full-time. My inquisitive brain can't help but gravitate towards Baldur's Gate. However, I've never been a D&D guy, or a turn-based guy for that matter. I'm an RPG and fantasy junkie, but as I approach the ripe age of 30, I'm becoming more tired and desire a simpler experience. Currently playing through Mirage, which is excellent. My question, therefore, is will I like Baldur's Gate 3? Big Bethesda fan, Middle Earth merchant, etc. So this seems up my alley, but I can't decide, and I need your help. Admire the waves, Big Daddy Wards. Three kisses.
My instant reaction would be, yes, I would play it. A, just because it's one of the best games I've ever played in my life. B, I'm not a D&D person at all.
Yeah.
I do, you know, I like, as yourself, I'm a big Bethesda fan and Middle-Earth person. But yeah, I'm not. And you say you like RPGs, this would be the best RPG ever made. So yeah. I would say, if you're willing to sink 150 hours into Starfield, which I don't think is great, but if you enjoyed it, fair play to you. You could easily sink 150 hours into this game and I would almost guarantee have a better time.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've mentioned this when we discussed Baldur's Gate 3, but never gave a shit about D&D, never really cared ever about turn-based games. And Baldur's Gate is just a wonderful, lovely experience, especially if you can play with a mate or a partner. If not, though, if you're just playing it solo, just slap it on easy and have a lovely time.
And I would also see... this as strictly turn-based either. Like, it's not just like you attack, I attack. It's kind of, you just interact with the environment and your enemies in such a different way to most, just, you know, it's not Persona or Pokemon. You're just like attacking using items. It's so much more than that.
The other thing I'd really emphasize with this is that, yes, the combat systems are there. I never think of Baldur's Gate as strictly a combat game. It's not like, one of the problems that I did have, like moving from... I finished Baldur's Gate and went straight into Starfield, basically, and I massively bounced off Starfield. But a part of what I couldn't get over is going back to this traditional computer game RPG format, in that when you go into a dungeon, it's just full of enemies that you just have to like either slash or shoot through. Combat in Baldur's Gate is so purposeful. Like, you get a combat encounter when the story calls for combat. And so quite a lot of what you're doing is actual RPG stuff, where you're going around and talking to people and investigating places, exploring things, digging up weird old relics and making really big chance decisions on whether, like, do I open this book and potentially doom a planet or whatever. it's all that sort of genuine RPG stuff, which I think kind of like a lot of games have in RPG sort of circles have shifted more being into action games. And I think to go back to something that is a proper RPG where you only get combat where it's supposed to be is really cool. And it means that you're not going to be bogged down. If you're not massively into turn-based combat, it's not like that is the core part of this experience.
Yeah. I would say give it a go. It's easy for me to say because I adore it. But, you know, I can't say. I'm sure there's people, a lot of people that have bounced off of it.
Oh, yeah, almost certainly.
I would say just from your interest as to that, I'd give it a go. So there we go. Matt, hello. What we got?
This one's from James Clark. He says, hi, guys. Just piling in on a couple of your ongoing chats in the feedback, if that's okay. Of course it's okay. Rewind back to summer 2020, and I'm playing the game I've been waiting years for, The Last of Us 2, the first game being my favourite ever until the sequel came along. Not only that, but COVID is in full flow. Oh, my God. Wife is not only a pediatric intensive care nurse, but also 4 months pregnant. Cue me being a bawling mess through most of the first and last act of this game. Flash forward to Valentine's Day 21, and we welcome our first beautiful child, Ellie, into our family.
Lovely stuff.
It helps when it's a pretty popular name, but sometimes it's okay to name your kids after your favourite characters.
I agree, because Ellie's just a very nice
name. Yeah, you're not going to name him like
I think it's more, you know, exactly. It's not, you know, it's not, I don't know.
I wouldn't necessarily call my son like Halson or...
Yeah, or Bloodstarved Beast.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
However, hashtag justice for Joel. Not entirely sure I agree. Joel maybe got what he was asking for. With respect to all other cheats available in games, I don't think anything comes close to typing, how do you turn this on, into the text chat window on Age of Empires 2. The feeling of countering those pesky Brit longbows with a fully stacked Shelby Cobra sports car with minigun attachment that flies around the map faster than a camel on heat is second to none. Thanks for all the great work as always, guys. Respect to the sea and... as always, and I have to say, I miss the original Endless Search theme. Bring it back.
Oh, I would say I didn't realize that as a cheat you could do in Age of Empires 2, but that sounds sick.
I'd never played a huge amount of Age of Empires 2. It was something that like I saw my friends playing. I didn't remember the Shelby Cobra. I do remember that you could summon in stormtroopers with laser guns.
That's sick. On Star Wars, I think one of my favorite, and it's not even a cheat, it's just how you activate cheats, but putting the console command in Jedi Academy and stuff, just help
there
us
is no
Obi-Wan.
Spoon.
Oh no, it's help us Obi-Wan. That's what I remember.
What's that one for?
That's for Jedi Knight.
No, but what does it do? What does the
oh no, it allows you to activate the cheats. You put that in, then it enables cheats. And
no,
stuff,
my main memory of that was there is no spoon. I think made the slow motion stuff, but there was also Saber Realistic Combat was the one which allowed you to cut people's limbs off. The other one I remember, of course, is it Rosebud in The Sims gives you like a million simoleons cash?
Yeah, you have to get the gnome first, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that weird little gnome.
Never feel guilty for using cheats in The Sims. Just feels right.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said last week, it's all about building the house. I don't care about playing the game. I just want to build a house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't listen to last week's podcast, but I'm sure I saw the email that was about cheat codes, wasn't it? And why I assume,
asking like people's favorite cheat codes and why they don't exist anymore.
Yeah, I guess originally cheat codes were developer codes, weren't they? Just to help them like bounce their way through a dev build, and then they just kind of stay in there. But I'm surprised that there's not more developers, because obviously Rockstar builds cheats into the game.
Yeah,
because in was it GTA 5 where and 4 I think maybe where you dial them into the phone.
Yeah,
the phone. To activate them.
I'm surprised more games don't have something that's a bit like that.
I miss. This is going to sound very odd, but I miss the smell and texture feeling just when you're holding it off, like the I think it was called Cheats Unlimited, and it was sort of like this yellow page cheat book for like the PlayStation 2, which I think
you missed
the
smell of this book.
It just had like I can't remember what specific type of paper it was. It was like just shitty cheap-ish feeling paper and stuff. And I remember like it had like that really sort of cringy like CG babe on it. It was holding like an Uzi or something, and it was full of cheats.
God, that's proper early 2000s game media nonsense.
That probably came free with Maxim or something.
I mean, all
is that
all
too high class?
Just regular, like OPM would have had that sort of shit in it.
I did find a picture of it. This is the exact book.
There you go. Great for the listener audience here. But if you want to search for Cheats Unlimited book, I do actually remember
this, Jesse.
Yeah.
God, that is a lot of
cheats. You can actually call as well.
I mean, they say cheats unlimited, but then it says over 20,000. So you would have thought, you know, it's unlimited. You know, I suppose over 20,000 is unlimited.
What pissed me off, though, is that those cheat books would sometimes just have cheats that just didn't work, or there were things that they found on, like, the internet that just weren't true, and they'll just print it on that page forever. I was just like, bastards.
Just said, it says compiled by gaming experts. We need to find out who these people were.
I really want to call that number and see where that leads to now.
I don't even know. What, like, region is an 09067
Isn't that just
number?
The business number here?
Is it?
I thought it was.
I mean, it's a lot. I can't remember last time I just put in a phone number into a phone, to be honest. But there we go. I've got always let us know any more cheats you remember. IGN_UK feedback@IGN.com I've got one more email here from Kyle Wilcat, who says, "Hi all. I was doing my weekly shopping Coles this weekend when I came across what I think is an odd seasonal food. It was a vampire crumpet."
What?
"A square crumpet with round top that looks like it had a rough face toasted on it. It was one of the oddest seasonal foods I've ever seen. What odd seasonal foods have you seen?" Kyle.
What's Coles? Seen any?
What is Coles? That's a good... is this in a part of the
Australian
country?
Apparently.
Is it Australian? Okay.
I was like, how have I not seen that?
I'm trying to think of like any seasonal foods. I mean, Christmas stuff is already starting to appear in shops. It's utter madness.
Yeah. I mean, the fucking kings of that are like fucking Iceland with just any sort of literally anything. It could be a waffle shaped as a fucking bat or some bullshit, or anything that will be shaped into any sort of animal.
I think Asda do a pizza shaped as a bat for Halloween.
But that just seems like you're getting less pizza, so I don't know why you would choose that. Yeah, so what's the point?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, so the thing that always gets me is like, you know, Easter or Christmas, whatever it is, and they have all the Easter chocolate or the Christmas chocolate. Then, like, the day after Christmas, day after Easter, they're all half price. It's like, it's still the same chocolate and the same, like, weight. Like, why is it all down to 20p? Because it's shaped like an egg.
People aren't buying them because they're all bought as gifts, aren't they?
I know, but still charge it the same amount as you would, like, a 100-gram bar. Like, to me, it makes no economical sense.
I would never complain about getting that chocolate for cheaper than...
I'm not complaining about buying it. I'm just why do the shops just, like, cave in so quickly? It's like a minute past midnight after Easter. They're like, right, everything's 20p.
I mean, my local Big Iceland closed down a few months ago, so I don't even get to see that anymore.
How are you coping with that? You were crying the other day.
We've turned into a Lidl people now. It's not bad. Not bad. Decent transition.
I don't have a... Do I have a Lidl near me? Is it a lot of people say the Lidl bakery? Is it good?
It slaps. There is a large
assortment. What's your favourite item from the Lidl bakery?
I mean, they do a really good like, what's it like pink icing donut and stuff. Their brownies are really good. So their pretzels, they have a large selection of bread. They've got... Oh my God, some sort of like just nice olive kind of sourdough thing they do. It slaps.
Well, that'll go well with Matt's soup.
So I shop at Tesco and they do have a good rich like bastard olive sourdough, which is good with soup.
There we go. Let us know what your favourite sourdough is or favourite item.
What's
from
your
the favourite Lidl bakery?
Or favourite bread, in fact. Obviously, I get sourdough because it doesn't seem to like go mouldy as quick as other breads, but
that's
there are plenty
show,
of other
actually
good breads.
I only ever sourdough toast it though. I never just like make a sourdough sandwich like on toast.
No, I would.
I like it toasted.
It's the only bread I like now.
It's the only bread. I love brioche. I know it's sweet, but I do love a brioche.
You wouldn't have it for savory purposes though, would you? I guess
I would. I would. Yeah, you'd have a burger or
Challah bread is pretty top tier. That's fucking ace.
There we go. Bread chat. More of that next week. what music do we want? The RoboCop theme?
Why not?
Bit of RoboCop? Yeah. Why not? Let's do that. Have a lovely weekend and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.